A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. And it's actually a medical mystery wrapped in a personal story. He wore contact lenses for about 5 years, starting in his mid-teens, daily disposables, everything was fine. Then one summer on a J-1 visa in New York, he ran out of lenses and started reusing dailies to stretch his supply. That triggered what got diagnosed as keratitis, treated with optical steroids. Here's the thing. This was over a decade ago. The infection cleared up, but he hasn't been able to tolerate contact lenses since. Every type he tries, even the ultra-comfort ones, his eyes just feel irritated and dry. He's asking whether there's a real physiological explanation for this, or if he's just gotten too comfortable with glasses.
Oh, this is a fantastic question. And by fantastic, I mean it's one of those cases where the obvious answer, the infection healed, move on, completely fails to explain what's actually happening. I saw a really thorough review of this in Ophthalmology a few years back. The short version is that keratitis doesn't just leave when the infection clears. It can fundamentally remodel the corneal surface and nerve architecture in ways that make contact lens wear basically impossible forever.
Remodel the nerve architecture?
It often is. And before we go deeper, quick note, today's script is being generated by DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
We'll see if it holds up through the corneal nerve discussion. So walk me through this. Daniel gets an infection. They treat it with steroids. The redness and pain go away. Why can't his eye just go back to normal?
Because the cornea isn't like skin. It doesn't just regenerate the same tissue it had before. When you get a significant inflammatory event like keratitis, and I should specify, this was almost certainly microbial keratitis given the contact lens overwear context. The infection itself and the subsequent inflammatory response damaged the corneal epithelium, the basement membrane, and critically, the subbasal nerve plexus. That's the dense network of nerves that sits just beneath the surface of the cornea.
Subbasal nerve plexus. That sounds like something you'd find in a particularly complicated piece of stereo equipment.
It's actually more like a carpet of microscopic wiring. The cornea is the most densely innervated tissue in the human body. We're talking about 300 to 600 times more nerve endings than skin per square millimeter. These nerves do two things. They sense pain and irritation, obviously, but they also release trophic factors, growth factors that maintain the health of the corneal epithelium itself. The nerves and the surface cells are in constant communication.
When the infection damages those nerves, it's not just a sensation problem. The whole maintenance system gets disrupted.
And here's where the steroid treatment gets complicated. Daniel mentioned optical steroids. That's topical corticosteroids, probably prednisolone acetate or something similar. Steroids are absolutely the right call for managing the inflammatory component of keratitis. You want to prevent corneal scarring, and steroids do that by suppressing the immune response. But here's the trade-off. Nobody talks about enough. Corticosteroids also inhibit nerve regeneration.
The treatment that saves your cornea from scarring also prevents the nerves from growing back properly?
That's the cruel irony. There's a paper from the Bascom-Palmer Eye Institute, I think it was 2019, that looked at corneal nerve density after resolved microbial keratitis. Patients treated with topical corticosteroids showed significantly lower subbasal nerve density at 12 months compared to those who didn't receive steroids. Now, you absolutely still use the steroids because scarring is worse, but the nerve damage is a real consequence.
Daniel's cornea healed structurally. No scar, clear surface. But the nerve network underneath never fully recovered.
That brings us to the condition that probably explains his symptoms, sometimes called corneal neuropathic pain. It's essentially phantom limb syndrome for your eye. The nerves that did regenerate are abnormal. They're hypersensitive, they fire inappropriately, and they misinterpret normal stimuli as irritation or dryness.
When he puts a contact lens on, which is just a piece of soft hydrogel sitting on the eye, those misfiring nerves interpret it as an assault.
And here's the thing about corneal neuralgia. It's wildly underdiagnosed. A lot of ophthalmologists will look at a clear cornea under the slit lamp and tell the patient there's nothing wrong, but the problem isn't visible on standard examination. You need confocal microscopy to actually image the subbasal nerve plexus and see the reduced density, the abnormal branching, the neuromas, little tangled knots of regenerating nerve that form when healing goes wrong.
Neuromas in the eye. That's a deeply unpleasant phrase.
They're microscopic, but they're exquisitely sensitive. Even the pressure of a contact lens edge, which a normal cornea barely registers, can trigger a disproportionate pain response in someone with post-keratitis corneal neuralgia.
Daniel specifically mentioned that even the most comfortable lenses, the ones marketed for dry eye, the high water content ones, the silicone hydrogels, they all feel irritating.
Because the problem isn't the lens material. It's the nerve response. You could put the most biocompatible, oxygen-permeable, teardrop-mimicking lens ever engineered on his eye, and those hypersensitive nerves would still fire. The lens is a foreign body, and his corneal nerves have decided that foreign bodies are categorically unacceptable now.
Let me ask you about the dry eye component, because he mentioned that specifically. His eyes feel dry with lenses. Is that part of the same nerve problem, or is that a separate mechanical issue?
It's both, and they're connected in ways that create a vicious cycle. Let me break this down. First, those corneal nerves I mentioned, the ones that sense irritation, they also sense dryness and trigger the lacrimal functional unit. That's the feedback loop where your cornea detects that it's getting dry, signals the brainstem, and the brainstem tells your lacrimal glands to produce more tears. If the sensory nerves are damaged, that feedback loop is broken. Your eye can be bone dry and the signal never gets through properly.
The nerves that are supposed to say, hey, we need moisture, are the same ones that got fried by the infection.
By the steroids. And there's a second layer. The corneal epithelium itself, the outermost layer of cells, can be subtly irregular after keratitis. Even without visible scarring, the cellular architecture may not be as smooth as it was before. That irregularity disrupts the tear film. The tear film is only about 3 microns thick, roughly the width of a single red blood cell, and it needs to spread evenly across an optically smooth surface. If the surface has microscopic irregularities, the tear film breaks up prematurely, and you get dry spots.
That's absurdly thin.
It's one of the reasons the cornea is such a remarkable structure, but it also means there's almost no margin for error. A contact lens sitting on an irregular corneal surface with a disrupted tear film. The lens itself further disrupts the tear film by physically separating it into a pre-lens layer and a post-lens layer. If the post-lens tear layer isn't stable, the lens is essentially rubbing against a dry, irregular, hypersensitive surface.
Daniel's been trying different lens materials for years, presumably hoping one of them would solve this.
Which is completely rational, and I'd have done the same thing. But it's like trying different shoes when the problem is nerve damage in your foot. The shoe material isn't the issue.
Let me push on something. He's been wearing glasses for over a decade now. Is there any component of this that's just adaptation? His brain got used to the glasses experience, and the contact lens sensation now feels foreign because he's not acclimated to it anymore?
That's a fair question, and I think there's probably a small perceptual component. Anyone who switched from contacts to glasses for a few years will find lenses feel a bit odd when they go back. But that typically resolves within a few days of wear. Daniel's describing persistent irritation and dryness that doesn't adapt. That's not a habituation issue. That's a physiological barrier.
What about the specific fact that he was reusing daily disposables? Is there something about that behavior that makes this kind of long-term damage more likely than, say, sleeping in extended wear lenses?
Daily disposables are designed for single use for a reason. The lens material absorbs proteins, lipids, and microorganisms from the tear film throughout the day. When you take that lens out and store it, even in solution, you're not getting it fully sterile. The lens matrix traps bacteria and fungal spores. Then, when you put it back in, you're essentially incubating whatever colonized the lens directly against your corneal epithelium.
Daniel was doing this in New York in the summer. I'm guessing humidity and heat don't help.
They make it dramatically worse. Warm, humid conditions accelerate microbial growth. A used daily lens sitting in a case, or worse, sitting out somewhere, becomes a petri dish. The specific pathogen matters too. Pseudomonas aeruginosa is the classic contact lens-related keratitis organism, and it's particularly nasty because it produces proteases that actively digest corneal tissue. Acanthamoeba is rarer, but even more devastating, and it's associated with tap water exposure to lenses.
That's the one that lives in water and eats your cornea.
It's a free-living amoeba, yes, and it forms cysts that are incredibly resistant to treatment. The fact that Daniel's keratitis responded to steroids suggests it was probably bacterial or inflammatory rather than acanthamoebal, because steroids are actually contraindicated in acanthamoeba keratitis. They can worsen it by suppressing the immune response that's trying to contain the amoeba.
The fact that his doctor prescribed steroids, and it worked, tells us something about what he probably had.
It narrows the differential, most likely bacterial, possibly with a significant inflammatory component. And the thing about bacterial keratitis is that even after the bacteria are dead, the inflammatory cascade they triggered can continue causing damage for weeks. Neutrophils show up to fight the infection, but they release enzymes and reactive oxygen species that damage healthy tissue in the process. It's the immunological equivalent of bombing your own city to drive out an invader.
Then the steroids come in to call off the bombing, but the city's already been hit.
The rebuilding process is imperfect. Let me get into something that I think is the real core of Daniel's question. Why did this become permanent? Why didn't he heal back to baseline over 10 years?
10 years is a long time. You'd think the body would figure it out.
Corneal nerves do regenerate, but they do it slowly and often incompletely. The subbasal nerves originate from the stromal nerves, which come from the limbal region, the border between the cornea and the sclera. After a significant injury, the stromal nerves have to regrow into the cornea, then branch up into the subbasal plexus. This process can take years, and the regenerated nerves often don't follow the same architecture as the original ones.
They grow back wrong.
They grow back differently. More tortuous, with abnormal branching patterns, reduced density, and sometimes those neuromas I mentioned. There was a study using confocal microscopy that tracked corneal nerve regeneration after keratitis. At 5 years post-infection, nerve density was still significantly reduced compared to healthy controls. Not slightly reduced, significantly. We're talking about a 30-50% reduction in nerve fiber density that persists for years.
30-50% fewer nerves. That's not subtle.
It's not just the number of nerves. The remaining nerves show abnormal morphology. They're more beaded, more tortuous, and they have reduced sensitivity in some areas and heightened sensitivity in others. It's a patchwork of dysfunction across the corneal surface.
When Daniel puts a contact lens on, it's landing on a surface that has dead zones and hyperactive zones right next to each other.
The brain is receiving a completely incoherent signal from that surface. Some regions are sending no signal at all. Others are screaming. The brain interprets that chaos as irritation and dryness, even if the lens is perfectly comfortable by any objective measure.
This makes me wonder about something. If the nerves are the problem, not the lens, is there any treatment that targets the nerves rather than just trying different lenses?
This is where it gets interesting, and also a bit frustrating. There are emerging treatments for corneal neuralgia, but none of them are straightforward. Autologous serum eye drops are one option. They're made from the patient's own blood serum, which contains nerve growth factor and other trophic factors that can support nerve regeneration and epithelial health. There's decent evidence they improve symptoms in about 60-70% of patients with severe dry eye and corneal neuralgia.
You centrifuge your own blood and put the serum in your eyes.
It's not as medieval as it sounds. The serum is filtered, diluted, and packaged into sterile dropper bottles. Patients use it 4-6 times a day. It's expensive and logistically annoying, but for some people is transformative.
That seems like something Daniel might not have tried, given he's been focused on finding better lenses, rather than treating the underlying nerve issue.
There's also scleral lenses, which are a completely different category from the soft lenses he's been trying. Scleral lenses are large, rigid gas, permeable lenses that vault over the entire cornea and rest on the sclera, the white part of the eye. They create a fluid reservoir between the lens and the cornea, so the cornea is essentially bathing in saline all day.
The lens never actually touches the hypersensitive corneal surface.
For patients with post-keratitis corneal neuralgia, scleral lenses can be a game changer because they bypass the corneal nerves entirely. The lens edge sits on the sclera, which has far fewer pain receptors. The cornea just floats in its little saline bubble, protected from the air, protected from the eyelid friction, protected from everything.
I'm guessing they're not easy to wear. Rigid lenses, large ones. That sounds like an adjustment.
They're harder to insert and remove than soft lenses. They require more maintenance, and the fitting process is much more involved. You need a specialist who does scleral lens fitting, and it typically takes multiple visits to get the fit right. But for someone who genuinely cannot tolerate soft lenses due to corneal neuralgia, they can be the difference between contact lens wear being possible or impossible.
Daniel might actually have options he hasn't explored, if he's only been trying different soft lens varieties.
That's where I'd push back on the idea that he simply got too comfortable with glasses. If he's been actively trying different lenses for years, which he says he has, that's not someone who's complacent with glasses. That's someone who wants to wear contacts and keeps hitting a physiological wall.
Let me ask you about the diagnostic side. If Daniel walked into an ophthalmologist today and said, I had keratitis 10 years ago, I can't tolerate lenses, what's going on? What should that ophthalmologist do beyond just looking at his cornea with a slit lamp?
Confocal microscopy, first and foremost. That's the gold standard for imaging the corneal subbasal nerve plexus. It'll show nerve density, nerve morphology, the presence of neuromaze, and any inflammatory cells that might still be hanging around. It's not available at every practice. You typically need a corneal specialist at an academic center, but it's the test that will actually answer the question.
If the confocal shows reduced nerve density and abnormal morphology, that confirms the corneal neuralgia hypothesis.
There's also corneal esthesiometry, which measures corneal sensitivity directly. You touch the cornea with a fine filament and see if the patient can feel it. In post-keratitis neuralgia, you often get a paradoxical result. Reduced sensitivity to the filament, meaning the nerves are objectively damaged, but increase spontaneous pain and irritation. The nerves don't respond normally to stimuli, but they fire inappropriately on their own.
That's the phantom limb thing again. The nerves are damaged enough that they don't sense touch properly, but they're also generating false pain signals.
That dissociation between objective sensitivity and subjective pain is exactly why these patients often get dismissed. The doctor touches the cornea, the patient doesn't feel it, so the doctor concludes the cornea is fine. Meanwhile, the patient is experiencing constant discomfort that the exam didn't capture.
There's probably a version of Daniel's story where he went to an ophthalmologist, got told his cornea looks fine, and was sent home with artificial tears that didn't help.
That's the most common outcome for corneal neuralgia patients. They cycle through multiple doctors, multiple lens brands, multiple artificial tear formulations, and nothing works because nobody's addressed the nerve problem.
What about the steroids themselves? You mentioned they inhibit nerve regeneration. Is there any research on how long that inhibitory effect lasts? Is it possible that a short course of steroids 10 years ago permanently altered his corneal nerve recovery trajectory?
The steroid effect is acute. It's during the treatment period and the weeks to months afterward when nerve regeneration is actively happening. Once the steroid is discontinued, the inhibitory effect stops. But here's the key point. The critical window for nerve regeneration is in the first few months after the injury. If nerve regrowth is suppressed during that window, the subsequent regeneration may be permanently limited. It's not that the steroids are still active 10 years later, it's that the nerves missed their best opportunity to regrow properly, and what grew back is the best the body could manage under compromised conditions.
The timing matters enormously. If Daniel had the infection, got put on steroids for several weeks, and during those weeks the nerves were trying to regenerate, but being chemically suppressed, that set the pattern for everything that followed.
We should talk about what several weeks means in practice. For significant microbial keratitis, the standard steroid taper can last 2 to 3 months. That's a long time to be suppressing nerve regeneration during the critical healing window. The infection itself might have cleared in 2 weeks, but the steroid treatment extends well beyond that.
2 to 3 months of nerve growth suppression, right when the nerves are trying to recover from the infection damage. That's a brutal 1-2 punch.
It's the right treatment for preventing vision loss from scarring, but the cost is long-term nerve dysfunction. Medicine is full of these trade-offs where you're choosing between two bad outcomes, and you pick the one that preserves vision even if it means chronic discomfort.
Because you can live with discomfort. You can't live with a scarred, opaque cornea.
A dense central corneal scar would permanently reduce visual acuity. No contact lens, no glasses can fully correct vision through a scarred cornea. You'd need a corneal transplant, so the steroids were absolutely the right call. But Daniel's current intolerance is the price of that decision.
That's a heavy way to think about it, but it makes sense. Now, you mentioned scleral lenses as a potential option. Are there other treatments for the nerve issue itself that don't involve wearing a lens?
A few, and most of them are relatively new. There's topical nerve growth factor, recombinant human nerve growth factor, brand name Oxervate, which got FDA approval for neurotrophic keratitis. That's a related but distinct condition where the corneal nerves are so damaged that the epithelium breaks down and won't heal. Oxervate directly stimulates nerve regeneration and epithelial healing. It's not approved for corneal neuralgia without epithelial breakdown, but there's off-label interest.
It's probably eye-wateringly expensive. Pun not intended, but I'll take it.
It is remarkably expensive. The list price was something like $95,000 for an 8-week course when it launched. It's come down somewhat, but it's still a specialty biologic with a specialty price tag.
$95,000 to maybe fix nerve pain in your eye. That's a tough sell to an insurance company.
There's also oral medications that modulate neuropathic pain. Gabapentin, pregabalin, low-dose naltrexone. These are borrowed from the chronic pain world, and they work systemically to dampen abnormal nerve firing. Some corneal specialists are using them for severe corneal neuralgia with decent results, but the evidence is mostly case series and small studies, not large randomized trials.
We're in that frustrating zone where the condition is real, the mechanism is understood, but the treatment evidence is still thin.
Welcome to corneal neuralgia in a nutshell. It's a recognized condition with clear pathophysiology, but it sits in a gap between ophthalmology and pain medicine that neither field has fully claimed.
Let me circle back to something Daniel mentioned in his prompt that I want to make sure we address. He said the incident was more than 10 years ago, and he stopped being able to tolerate lenses entirely one day. That phrasing, entirely one day, suggests there was a sharp cutoff. Before the infection, lenses were fine. After the infection, lenses were impossible. No gradual decline, no period where he could wear them for a few hours, but not all day. Just a binary switch.
That's actually a really important detail. A binary switch from tolerance to intolerance strongly argues against simple dry eye or age-related changes. Dry eye typically develops gradually. Lens intolerance from dry eye usually creeps up. You go from comfortable all-day wear to needing to remove them after 8 hours, then 6, then 4. Daniel's describing something that flipped like a circuit breaker.
Which fits the nerve damage model much better than the dry eye model.
A severe inflammatory event can cause acute neuropathic changes that are essentially permanent from the moment they occur. The nerves are damaged, they heal abnormally, and from that point forward they respond to contact lens wear as a noxious stimulus. There's no gradual adaptation because the underlying hardware has been fundamentally altered.
When Daniel tries a new lens now and feels irritation immediately, that's not him being picky or uncommitted to adapting. That's his corneal nerves doing exactly what damaged nerves do. They're sending a danger signal in response to a stimulus they've been programmed to reject.
I want to emphasize something about the subjective experience here, because I think it's important for understanding why this is so frustrating for patients. When you have corneal neuralgia and you put in a contact lens, the sensation isn't necessarily pain in the way most people think of pain. It can be a low-grade awareness of the lens, a constant, unignorable sense that something is in your eye. Which, of course, something is in your eye. But a normal cornea adapts to that sensation within minutes and stops registering it. A neuropathic cornea never adapts. Every blink reminds you the lens is there. Your brain never gets to filter it out.
Sounds exhausting.
And it's one of the reasons people with this condition often describe themselves as having just given up on lenses, even though they'd prefer them. It's not laziness or lack of motivation. It's that wearing lenses becomes a form of low-grade torture that you can't escape until you take them out.
What would you tell Daniel if he was sitting here? He's tried every soft lens variety. Nothing works. He's been in glasses for a decade. What's the path forward?
First, I'd tell him the problem is real and it has a name. Corneal neuralgia post-infectious keratitis. The fact that lenses don't work isn't a personal failure, and it's not that he's just gotten too used to glasses. There's a physiological explanation that's well documented in the literature. It matters enormously, especially for a condition that's often dismissed. Second, I'd suggest he see a corneal specialist, not a general ophthalmologist, not an optometrist, but someone who specializes in corneal disease at an academic medical center. They'll have confocal microscopy, and they'll know what to look for. Third, if confocal microscopy confirms reduced nerve density or abnormal nerve morphology, I'd discuss two parallel paths. One is treating the underlying nerve issue, autologous serum drops, possibly topical nerve growth factor if he can get it covered, or oral neuropathic pain medications if the discomfort is severe enough to warrant systemic treatment. The other is scleral lenses, which bypass the corneal surface entirely and might actually let him wear contacts again if that's what he wants.
If scleral lenses don't work either,
then he's in the cohort of patients for whom contact lens wear is not possible due to irreversible corneal nerve changes. That cohort exists, it's not small, and the best approach at that point is optimizing his glasses experience and managing any residual dry eye symptoms with the usual armamentarium. Artificial tears, punctal plugs, environmental modifications, omega-3 supplementation.
Those are the little silicone things they put in your tear ducts to stop tears from draining away.
They're simple, reversible, and they can make a meaningful difference for dry eye symptoms even if they don't solve the contact lens problem.
Let me ask you one more thing about the original incident. Daniel was on a J-1 visa in New York when this happened. That means he was probably a student, probably didn't have great health insurance, probably delayed getting care because he was trying to stretch his lenses until an appointment. Does delayed treatment make the long-term nerve damage more likely?
The longer the infection goes untreated, the more extensive the inflammatory damage to the corneal nerves. If he was reusing lenses for days or weeks while experiencing symptoms, the microbial load was building, the inflammatory response was ramping up, and the nerves were taking sustained damage before any treatment started. Early treatment of microbial keratitis is one of the biggest predictors of good long-term outcomes, including nerve recovery.
The whole situation, running out of lenses, trying to make them last, probably minimizing symptoms because he didn't want to deal with the American healthcare system on a student visa, all of that contributed to the severity of the damage.
It's a perfect storm. Reused lenses, warm, humid New York summer, delayed treatment, potent steroids during the critical nerve regeneration window. Any one of those factors alone might not have caused permanent intolerance. All of them together created a situation where the corneal nerves were damaged, suppressed during healing, and regenerated abnormally. 10 years later, the result is what Daniel's experiencing.
The fact that it's been 10 years means this isn't going to spontaneously resolve. Whatever regeneration was going to happen has already happened.
That's the reality. Spontaneous improvement after a decade is unlikely, but that doesn't mean there's nothing to do. It means the approach shifts from waiting for healing to actively intervening, either treating the nerve dysfunction or working around it with different lens technologies.
I think there's something almost reassuring about that. The mystery is solved, the problem has a name, and even if the solutions aren't easy, they exist.
I want to add one more thing that I think gets overlooked in these discussions. Daniel's been functioning fine with glasses for 10 years. He's not disabled, he's not in constant pain, he's living his life. The contact lens intolerance is a real loss, especially for someone who preferred lenses, but it's also a manageable one. Sometimes the right medical answer is, here's why this happened, here's what you can try, and also it's okay if you decide the juice isn't worth the squeeze and you stick with glasses.
Understanding the mechanism doesn't obligate you to pursue the treatment. Sometimes knowing why is enough.
And in Daniel's case, knowing that it's corneal neuralgia from post-infectious nerve damage, not just being difficult, not just needing to find the right lens, that knowledge itself can be the thing that lets him stop the endless cycle of trying new lenses and being disappointed.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, paleontologists in Nunavut discovered a fossilized trilobite eye so perfectly preserved that its calcite lenses still exhibited the same refractive properties they had when the animal was alive 400 million years ago, effectively making it a functioning optical device made of stone.
A stone eye that still refracts light properly after 400 million years. That's unsettling.
Nature's contact lens, and it outlasted every civilization that ever existed.
Here's the forward-looking thought I'm left with. We've spent this whole episode talking about corneal nerves and keratitis and contact lens intolerance, but the bigger question underneath all of it is how medicine handles these invisible injuries. Daniel's cornea looks fine under a slit lamp. The confocal would show the damage, but most people never get a confocal. How many people out there are cycling through lenses and eye drops and doctors, convinced the problem is them, when the problem is nerve damage they can't see, and their doctor isn't looking for?
That's the frontier. Corneal neuralgia is moving from being a niche diagnosis to something that's entering mainstream ophthalmology, but the transition is slow. Confocal microscopy needs to become more widely available. Nerve imaging needs to become a standard part of the workup for unexplained contact lens intolerance. The technology exists. The knowledge exists. It's the dissemination that's lagging.
For Daniel specifically, he's got an answer now, or at least a very strong hypothesis. Corneal neuralgia, post-infectious, likely permanent, with options if he wants to pursue them. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping this show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com for every episode. And if you've got a minute, leave us a review wherever you listen. We'll be back soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.